julio, de 7 de la noche a la medianoche, una fiesta que tendrá baile, que tendrá música, que tendrá comida y tendrá bebidas típicas para recaudar fondos para la radio KPFK. Bueno, estamos, la razón por la cual interrumpimos la programación regular de la KPFK y aclaración, el resto del programa lo podrán escuchar y descargar en www.kpfk.org. Repito, www.kpfk.org. También otra aclaración, después del informativo Pacífica, esta noche no habrá más programación en español, porque ocurre que la radio audiencia de los programas en español no están respondiendo de acuerdo a las necesidades financieras de KPFK. Es decir, para que nosotros podamos llegar a los $600,000 en el plazo que nos hemos puesto, tendríamos que recoger una cierta cantidad todos los días, una cierta cantidad de dinero cada hora, y bueno, el día de hoy hemos hecho $19,669. Hasta este momento hemos logrado acumular $288,716 para llegar a los 600,000. Bueno, nos falta más de la mitad del trecho, y como verán ustedes, algunos programas en español, la audiencia, los radio oyentes, no están reportándose con una colaboración, con una donación, ayudándonos a mantener los gastos básicos de las operaciones de esta emisora. Es por eso una de las más importantes razones de que el resto de la programación de hoy será en inglés, porque los radio oyentes que hablan inglés, ellos sí se meten la mano al bolsillo, sacan su tarjeta de crédito, usan su cuenta bancaria, su tarjeta de débito, etcétera, para apoyar a los gastos de la KPFK. Esperamos de que la audiencia hispanoparlante se ponga las pilas, se moche con una plata el día de hoy y pueda ayudarnos a mantener el informativo Pacífica para que no sea reemplazado por programación en inglés el resto de la recaudación de fondos. Llámanos pues al 818-985-5735. Una donación mínima de $25 no solamente te convierte en un miembro activo de la familia Pacífica, sino que te permite tener dos boletos el día de la fiesta, el día 23 de julio, para que llegues tú y otra persona, acompañados los dos, con dos boletos esperándolos en la puerta. Cuando ustedes lleguen, un lado de la carpeta roja, por así decirlo, estarán esperándote dos boletos ahí para ti y una persona que te acompañe. Llámanos pues al 818-985-5735. Ahí podrán bailar al ritmo del colectivo Ceniza, Zapoteca Roots, los Guaraperos y el artista centroamericano Will Echegoyen. Así pues, llámanos en este momento. Hay un grupo de personas en el cuarto de teléfonos, en uno de nuestros estudios, esperando que nos llames, que están pero ansiosos de escuchar tu voz, de saludarte, de platicar contigo y de recibir tu donación, a sabiendas de que el día 23, el sábado 23 de julio, estarán cuando menos dos boletos esperándote ahí en la puerta el día de la fiesta. Claro, eso no inhibe, no te quita de que puedas comprar, hacer una donación de 50, 75, 100 y llevar más personas a la fiesta, ¿cierto? 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. Como una forma de motivación, como un incentivo, como una forma de recordarte cuánto vales tú que nos escuches en este momento para la Radio Pacífica Los Ángeles. Cabe recalcar de que Radio Pacífica, a partir del principio del mes próximo, tendremos 5 horas adicionales en español, o sea que en lugar de empezar la programación todos los días a las 9 de la noche, empezará a las 8. Es decir, habrá una hora más todos los días de lunes a jueves. Entonces, eso es un reconocimiento, eso es una forma de incentivarte para que te des cuenta de que Radio Pacífica se da cuenta de esa realidad, del cambio demográfico, de la presencia de los latinos y las latinas en esta parte del mundo, y que esta creciente población requiere más espacio para que se informe, para que se divierta, para que se entretenga, para que se tenga oportunidades de escuchar documentales, entrevistas, discursos, noticias, obras de teatro, toda la programación que tendrán al alcance, que podrán desplayar, que podrán proyectar los nuevos programadores que ya se están entrenando. Algunos ya se graduaron, otros están asistiendo a la Escuela de Periodismo de Radio Comunitario de Radio Pacífica. En fin, ya hay todo un grupo de hombres y mujeres de varios grupos étnicos, de varias edades, que están preparados para traerte programación, una programación la que tú te mereces, pues. 818-985-5735 es el número a llamar para que nos para que tú tengas la oportunidad de hablar con las gentes que están ahorita, las personas que están contestando los teléfonos, y para que tú puedas hacer tu aportación, tu contribución, expresar tu solidaridad con la Radio Pacífica, que desde 1959 tiene una programación sin comerciales, pero se llama Pacífica. La primera estación de radio salió en Berkeley, California, fue lanzada en esa ciudad en 1949, no porque Berkeley y San Francisco están pegados a las playas de la costa del Océano Pacífico, sino porque el grupo de los fundadores de Radio Pacífica eran en realidad pacifistas, estaban en contra de la guerra, querían hacer algo al respecto, querían buscar forma, mecanismos de generar debate y discusión colectiva para cambiar la mentalidad de la gente, para cambiar el rumbo de las prioridades de los gastos del presupuesto de la nación, para no darle tanta importancia a la guerra, a la destrucción, a la conquista militar por la fuerza bruta, sino utilizar esos recursos para causas más nobles, por ejemplo la construcción de escuelas, de universidades, de clínicas, de carreteras, de puentes, etcétera. 818-985-5735 es el número a llamar si tú quieres ayudarnos a mantener esta causa noble de la promoción de la paz a través de la búsqueda de las causas, de las raíces de los conflictos y de las guerras. Pues llámanos en ese momento, te están esperando, hay un grupo de personas que espera tu llamada. 818-985-5735, y al mismo tiempo que apoyas a esta emisora a mantener sus gastos básicos para sus operaciones, también te llevas por cada donación de $25 dos boletos para la fiesta, la pachanga del día 23 de julio aquí en Los Ángeles. 818-985-5735. Podrás escuchar la música, y claro, es una danza, pues es un reventón. Habrá una pista de baile allí para que se sacuda la polilla, para que se pueda inspirar el espíritu, para hacerle honor a los dioses y a las diosas que saben bailar, que les gusta la música y la danza. 818-985-5735. Si tú haces una donación mínima de $25, podrás llevarte dos boletos para la recaudación de fondos de Radio Pacífica. Colectivo Ceniza, Zapoteca Roots, Los Guaraperos y Will Echegoyen estarán amenizando el momento, aparte de que habrá comida y bebidas típicas para la gente que pueda asistir allá, hacer convivio, construir comunidad y al mismo tiempo ayudar a KPFK. Se nos acaba el tiempo, tenemos que partir. Gracias a Federico García en los controles, a las personas que están contestando los teléfonos y a las personas que hicieron las donaciones. 818-985-5735, a nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Want to know what's going on at your favorite radio station, KPFK? For upcoming information about programs, guests, sponsored events, and exclusive content, become a fan of KPFK on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Make sure your voice is heard by commenting on our wall and starting up discussion topics. Just log on to Facebook, search for KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and click Become a Fan to follow up on your favorite shows. Suggest the page to your friends, too. To find us on Twitter, search for KPFK Updates, click Follow, and stay tuned for exciting news about upcoming topics and guests.
KPFK would certainly appreciate your volunteer time to help staff the phone bank during the fund drive. If you would like to volunteer at our phone bank, please come on down to KPFK at 3729 Cahuenga West in North Hollywood, or go to kpfk.org for more information. You get to meet other super cool KPFK fans like you and help out for a worthy cause this summer season. Again, come on down to KPFK at 3729 Cahuenga West in North Hollywood, or give us a call at 818-985-2711, Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. Once again, come on down and help us out. Thank you for your help.
Hello, my name is Kirby Washington. I call the Atwater Village part of town my home, and I'm 58 years old. I've been listening to KPFK since sometime in the 80s. I can't remember when. I know I was driving down Pico Boulevard all the way to the ocean one night for some meeting, and I was flipping around the dial, and I heard this amazing, amazing program. The content and the context were so deep and about real human issues. You never hear that on NPR. You know, they've got a little thin envelope of what they talk about, and it's not going to solve any problems over there. But what I heard on KPFK got me excited. You know what? It's the only place where you can hear the issues that count for people who have traditionally been discriminated against. So African Americans, Latinos, people in the LGBT community. There's a disability show on the station, and I happen to need the information from that. And it comes from real people who really research the issues, and they know what they're talking about, and they're sharing that.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 Great. FM. Great. Amen. Woo. FM, hallelujah.
Extremely good job. He has been self-educated by being there. I know that he has an excessive amount of
And yeah, up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. With me, Robert Norris. I'll be with you for 2 hours until 8 o'clock, a call-in show covering a lot of the Freedom Sleeper 52, the year anniversary of folks standing up for the rights of all of us, but particularly those outside City Hall. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing anything else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And, yeah, I don't know how many songs I'll be singing, but I'm going to be talking at you, and maybe you'll be talking back at me. The call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you are tuned to at 101.3 and freakradio.org, the show archived at huffsantacruz.org. So if you miss part of it or want to hear some of it again or just cannot get away from my voice, the affection of it all that you may be feeling, you can go there and you'll catch this show and past shows as well. So I just want to make an announcement at the beginning because there is a, usually I try to, in the past, announce current events. And here's a current event coming up tonight, the Cannabis Advocates Alliance meeting. That's at 7 to 9 p.m. Boulder Creek. For all you Boulder Creek people, I don't know how many people are listening up in Boulder Creek. I know our radio signal doesn't go up there, but you might be listening on the Internet, or you might be heading up that way for some reason. It's at the Boulder Creek Pizza and Pub, 7 to 9, Cannabis Advocates Alliance. I kind of wish I were up there because I've never... Well, it's been a long time since I got to a Cannabis Advocates Alliance meeting, and they are one of the few groups that has ever been able to stop a legislative bad act, in this case from the locally. This is from the Board of Supervisors when they were successful, or the stupid vipers, as I like to call them, on some issues, which is what they are. And that had to do with their ban on cannabis growing, commercial cannabis growing last summer, which they crushed. That is to say, which the CAA, the Cannabis Advocates Alliance, through circulating a referendum, crushed before it started and forced the soups to back off. Well, there's another problem we now have. A year later, the soups are proceeding with still another prohibition-type measure, more limited prohibition, but still treating a marijuana as some kind of pariah herb, treating marijuana as some kind of specially toxic poison ivy growth, requiring special treatment of all kinds and all sorts, which to me simply reflects the prejudices of the past. And I'm hoping that they will take a stand against the supervisor's latest proposals, which have to do with banning cannabis growing in all kinds of places, where some of the time it's currently being grown, and other places where it might be grown, and requiring all kinds of tricks, which Nick Balayich has outlined somewhat specifically and extensively on this show in the past. He's an activist, lives in Watsonville, but was a part of the C4 committee, which was, I thought it was going to be a cover-up group for the Board of Supervisors. In fact, they ignored many of the resolutions of the C4 committee. At least I think they did. There are those who disagree. And at least many of Nick's proposals. And they have proceeded to make it very difficult to grow commercial marijuana, unless you're a big grower, ironically enough, and unless you're not in the northern county area. And that has resulted in a backlash from the South County, where the supervisor there has said, no, we can't do it here either. As well as many, many setbacks that are severely limit where it can be grown, even in those areas where they allow it to be grown. I'm hoping that the CAA takes some action on this. If anybody gets up to that meeting, please give me a call at 423-4833 and let me know what came of it. I keep hoping that I'll be hearing back from the elusive Pat Malo, but he's still elusive, although I've run into him at a last meeting of the... a Felton kind of city hall meeting where Sheriff Jim Hartless, Jim Hart, what am I saying? I've kind of taken to looking down on the sheriff, given the way the jails are operating, since he's the man who operates the jails. He's a sheriff coroner. You know, the Krista DeLuca thing, which I've talked about in the past to those of you regular listeners, the woman who was choked and died on her own vomit because they're contracting with a private service that didn't want to spend the money to take her to the hospital. Instead, they proposed, Gatorade and breathing exercises. Yeah, that was last year. And more recently, we've seen the case of Andrea Morgan, where she called in a panic from jail because she couldn't get access to her methadone, and indeed nobody can in that jail, apparently, although John Colby has been doing some researching and putting through information requests to the sheriff, and hats off to him for doing that. So, again, if you have any thoughts on any of these issues or others, 427-3772 is the call-in number, and the Freedom Sleepers actually had their, as mentioned before, first anniversary day before yesterday. They'd be there for, that would be their 52nd Tuesday night there, more or less. I think the first one was a Sunday night or something. But they've been there every week, at least some of them. And so have the homeless people who have been using them as protective cover. That is to say, it seems the authorities don't want to ticket homeless people who sleep on the sidewalk. It's sort of like if you pass this cruel and unusual punishment of sleeping on the sidewalk, well, we'll let you sleep one night a week. Isn't that nice? It's pretty grotesque in Santa Cruz, as it's been for years with the city's anti-homeless sleeping van. So I'm going to sort of kick off the show by simply following the kind of picking up from the last show where I was giving you street interviews and the voices of the actual people on the streets, as is my wont. That's what I usually do. Just a sort of a brief comment about the Democracy Now! Data show, a show today, there we go, which I perhaps listen to too frequently. It's kind of fun and it's entertaining, but I don't know about entertainment versus action. And here in Santa Cruz, it's easy for the liberals and so-called progressives to entertain themselves while doing nothing about local police abuse and local criminalization of the poor and so forth. Myself included. But there's some interesting stuff today about the two police murders of black men in Baton Rouge and in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. I think that was the second one. And the significance of what that means for us, all captured on video. Really a horrific series of stories, which I'll also be looking over, I hope, if I have the time, some clippings. And there probably isn't going to be time today because I really am concerned with original content. If you want to watch Democracy Now!, it's available. In fact, Free Radio Santa Cruz plays Democracy Now!, sometimes late, like a day late or a weekend late, but we play it. And, of course, it's also available online, and it's available at other local NPR-ish type radio stations. I think KSCO does it. So, but it is worth a quick look, or maybe even a longer look, provided you link it up with what's happening here and don't just use it as sort of a slasher film, horror show, ain't it a shame elsewhere, gosh, something should be done, thump, 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 now what else is there to do today, type entertainment. So, as promised, let me turn to some street interviews from, I guess, we're all talking almost a week ago on Pacific Avenue on the 30th of June. Let's see if we're up to snuff here. Man in front of Bill Williams. A starving artist strumming away on a little electronic guitar. Somewhat inside the blue box, somewhat outside. I'll just listen to him for a bit. Thank you, sir. And he is technically illegal because about half his stuff is outside the brass/blue box.
Reports from the streets for Free Radio, huh?
I'm talking with
Darian Mitchell.
And Darian, I see you're working on your guitar here, and you have a sign, "Need a Ticket to Mars." How successful are you in your fundraising here?
I didn't give away all of my money at the end of the night anyhow, so perfectly as successful as I want to be.
And how are you doing? Did you make $1,000 today, perhaps?
Hell no. I made, maybe $5 today.
And how many hours were you out here?
I've been out here for the entire day.
And have you had any interesting encounters with the boys in blue with the guns?
Yes, they actually gave me a ticket for sitting in one of the boxes for too long.
And were you in the box for too long?
I probably was, according to their...
Did they ask you to leave before they gave you a ticket?
They didn't. She just walked up and told me I had been in the box for too long, and so I was getting a ticket. Actually, she accused me of playing my drum, which I wasn't doing. I was playing harmonica, and I don't know. I think that lady has something out for me. She has a reputation for that.
And for those who don't know, it's illegal on Pacific Avenue to perform outside the limited number of brass/blue boxes that you find engraved or embedded on the pavement up and down the street. And that's always, well, it's clearly ridiculous given the huge amount of space that's available and is obviously something designed to limit performers, speakers, tablers. Vendors are now being banned generally, except for those who can kind of prove it's their own artwork or are engaged in something that is so First Amendment protected that they don't quite dare go after it yet. Also, there's this Darian's testimony here tells us that they are now enforcing the new no warning provision, which means that they don't have to warn you before they come and ticket you after an hour is up. It's interesting. At some point, I'll discuss on the air the significance of the warning provision, as I understand it. It has a sort of a checkered history because it does provide an opportunity for police to selectively go after some people by warning them and other people by not, and then going after those they say they've warned. And it was used years ago, actually, when it was the original sitting ban came out. Now we have a sitting ban that criminalizes almost all of Pacific Avenue and the adjoining streets. You have to be 14 feet away from almost everything, buildings, crosswalks, telephones, benches, which leaves very little space to sit down on the sidewalk legally. You should obviously go into a cafe and spend some money, right? Seems to be maybe the unspoken directive. But in the old days when this law first came out, at the behest of merchants like the elder Neil Coonerty, former owner of the bookshop, I guess his children now own and manage it. They passed a law that was citywide that said sitting is illegal everywhere. And that was challenged by people in massive numbers and big protests, particularly after police started arresting food servers downtown in May of 1994. And the law eventually reached the court. All the cases were thrown out because two judges, and what was almost an unprecedented decision and not even equaled sense, I think it was Judges Barton and Salazar, who was a commissioner at the time, ruled that the warning provision of this law, at that time you had to be warned before they could give you a ticket for sitting, made the law unconstitutional, which in a way makes me think it's kind of it was a pretext because they wanted to throw it out because there was so much protest against it. Actually seemed to be provoking a massive protest downtown. I mean massive. Several hundred people showed up in May of that year. So now we have a case where the warning provision, however, has not suffered any constitutional challenge. Perhaps it's never been addressed as such. In those days we had ACLU activists who actually in some cases took these cases to court. Now we have ACLU activists who simply occasionally issue statements after being pressed to do so at great length, as they did on the sleeping ban, finally. But they don't get attorneys involved, even though an attorney or two does sit on the board of the local ACLU, Bob Caron, for instance. But he ain't offering to help, as far as I know, in these cases. But who knows? Maybe someone from the Northern California will come wandering down. So Darian Mitchell got a ticket for sitting in a box too long, and he wasn't warned. And let's hear some more.
Remember the name of the cop?
I'm not certain.
What did she look like?
I think it's either a full sleeve or a half sleeve on her left arm, I think it was.
Light blue or dark blue?
Light blue uniform.
CSO then, probably. I think I spoke to someone who heard about your situation, Nigel. I think he talked to me about your case. Were you, do you think it had anything to do with your skin color?
I think it's more classism than racism. The fact that I have a backpack, the fact that, like, I blatantly tell people my philosophies on life, which is paying taxes is, you know, tantamount to betraying yourself. I think, like, all that plays into it. When I first got to town, that lady just kind of, she walked up to me and a friend, and she just immediately started harassing us, and so I kind of knew from that moment on that Santa
Cruz... How did she start harassing you?
She actually gave my friend a ticket for sitting on the ground. He was waking me up, so I didn't get a ticket, and so she gave him a ticket for sitting on the ground, and during that time period, I guess, a lot of sarcasm. This would have been, actually, yeah, it was right over there.
You're pointing to...
in front of the hat, though.
The hat company?
The hat company. I was, I fell asleep in a bench. I was sitting on a bench, and my buddy had come to wake me up. He was chilling, tuning up his guitar.
What time of day?
This is like 6, 7 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning.
Yeah, the sun had just
violating
risen.
The sleeping ban, were you?
I was. My
buddy friend was not?
No, he knew where I was. He's a local here, so he already knew what to expect so far as the police go.
The woman who got a ticket?
I'm sorry?
Didn't you say someone else got a ticket near you?
When?
You just mentioned that this cop was harassing you because she gave your friend a ticket on your arrival, or?
All right, yeah. My buddy was a guy, but
sorry.
He got a ticket for sitting on the ground, and apparently they kind of showed that like they had some
was
history.
Was that in this incident where you were sleeping on the bench and he was resting on the bench,
and he showed up to wake me up? And during that time period, this female police officer showed up. They had a pretty sarcastic exchange.
Just a comment here. As regular listeners may remember, the Freedom Sleepers, when they sleep on Tuesday, don't get sleeping tickets on the sidewalk when they sleep there. And they're still giving sleeping tickets around the town. But I wonder if the failure to give a sleeping ticket is part of that same motivation not to boost the stats of how many sleeping tickets are issued, which might be evidence in some future court proceeding to indicate the city is harassing those who have no legal place to go, which federal, at least the Department of Justice has claimed is cruel and unusual punishment in at least one case. It hasn't actually won any cases about that, but that has persuaded numerous authorities in different cities, Vancouver, Glendale, and Southern California, Vancouver, Washington, not Vancouver, B.C., and other places to change their laws or their enforcement practices. I mean, I think even Boise, Idaho, the famous case that the Justice Department did weigh in on and said it's cruel and unusual punishment, claimed that the reason that they could keep their law was because they weren't enforcing it. And so I'm wondering if the failure to enforce has something to do with that kind of concern. I have no evidence one way or the other. It's just, it's a sort of a speculation. The sitting on the ground business is... part of the huge no forbidden zones around all kinds of objects on Pacific Avenue. You have to be 14 feet away from a bench, 14 feet away from a directory sign, 14 feet away from a telephone booth, 14 feet away from a building, 14 feet away from a curb. It leaves less, I estimate, if you were to consider the entire sidewalk devoid of all obstacles and all incursions and ingressions by the businesses, about less than 1% of that sidewalk is available for people to sit. Much of it is taken up with merchant sidewalk cafes, which look very trendy and seem very nice until you realize unless you have money, you better watch your step if you ever dare to sit down there for any length of time. And, of course, to prohibit people from sitting, particularly poor and homeless people, they've made it illegal to sit on a bench for more than an hour at any time of the day or night, and then you have to move 100 feet away to another bench. I think the warning provision, however, is still on the bench, but I have to double-check that. They have to warn you before they give you a $250 ticket. Let's continue to hear Saturday's stories from last week.
7 in the morning.
That's pretty freaking early.
Did she have her shotgun with her?
I didn't notice that.
Hunting, outdoors, people.
A very large baton. That's what I've been noticing. And I think that's kind of interesting, the fact that they have guns, batons, you know, chains.
You might attack them with your guitar.
There's a chance of that. Actually, earlier today, when she walked up to start talking to me, you know, I thought it'd be a regular encounter and then it'd be over. And three more cops just showed up, you know, just kind of to watch, and kind of getting the feel that they probably want to get me at some point.
Well, you should feel special, perhaps.
I kind of, whenever I have an encounter with the police, especially when it comes to my free speech, I tell them that I feel like they're violating their oaths to the Constitution, and also, like, when it comes to these blue boxes, that they're violating their oaths to the Constitution because they are enforcing laws that, you know, go directly against the, you know, written ones, the municipal rules or whatever.
I tend to agree with you that these boxes are an unconstitutional infringement on the right to assemble.
That's exactly actually what I'd said. And then I went one step further and kind of mentioned the fact that they use crime.
Hi, Dread Eye.
How are you?
All right.
They use crime to react to people committing crimes, and that's a huge fallacy because it gives the people, you know, in that weakened mind state, the idea that, you know, that the crime actually is the most powerful action that you can do, you know, in response to punish someone. In other words, like, for instance, if you kill someone and teach that killing is wrong, then, I mean, are you really teaching anybody anything?
Only if you're killing the right sort of person for the right sort of reason.
or if you kidnap me off the streets and teach me that kidnapping people, others is wrong, you know, or if you extort
me. It's a good
me.
Lesson.
Yeah, it seems that people have fallen more and more into this crazy idea that you can exchange your time for currency, which, you know, loses its value further and further every day. You know, if they can make it at will and it's a private organization not connected to this country, you know, I don't understand why people get so crazy over it.
It should also be noted that our speaker, Darian, is black. I don't know what mixture of actual ancestries he is, but his skin is certainly much darker than mine.
Are you interested in joining a vendors performers association that would theoretically resist these things?
While I'm here, I'm a traveler.
You're a traveling man.
Mm-hmm. Traveling man, rambling.
Well, I'll give you a card.
But I have done activism like all over the country, and so that'd be pretty cool.
This is the group I work with. This is the radio station you're going to be on Sunday morning, believe it or not.
Right on. I hope I didn't sound too uncertain of myself.
Occasionally, but no, it doesn't matter. You know, I'm uncertain of myself on occasion. You know, even me, you know. And we've been talking with?
Darian Mitchell.
Thank you, Darian. Robert.
Robert, I'm glad to meet you.
Pleasure, man.
You have a very good viewpoint, I can tell, on these things already.
Just up here in front of Poor, the new drink your way, your time away place.
Hi.
Hey, good. Tuning up one of your two guitars.
Yeah. Got so many guitars there, I don't know what to do.
Are you selling guitars illegally on Pacific Avenue, sir?
No, sir, I'm not.
Any reports from the street, anything happening to you today you wish to let us know about?
Oh, nothing that no one could probably figure.
Have you seen anything downtown that you think?
Well, the police state they're stepping it up.
How did you see? In what way would you say they're stepping it up?
By placing rangers.
And have you seen rangers here, or you just heard that?
I've heard this.
I hear it's coming in too, but.
And in fact, rangers have occurred. There are guys and perhaps women too in white. Say, I think they say downtown ranger patrol or some such thing. And the difference between rangers and the hosts that they are replacing, and perhaps the first alarm that they are replacing, is that A, they're supposed to be theoretically better trained, They probably have a better budget, and they also have more power. They have the actual power to issue citations and also to issue stay-away orders, even though they aren't judges, and you haven't had a trial, and you haven't been convicted of anything. But if they give you a citation, they can then give you a stay-away order. So they become the arbiters of the public spaces downtown completely. I don't know how frequently they have been giving stay-away orders yet, or if they've even given any citations yet, but I have seen them walking up and down Pacific Avenue. And I would like to know from folks out there if you've had experiences with these rangers or anyone else on Pacific Avenue in an official capacity. Do let me know at the off-air number, which is a number you can call if you want more information about free radio, or if you want to be involved in civil rights work around poor and homeless people such as HUFF, the group I work with, HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom does. But also reports of what's going on, which I'll pass on in these twice-weekly shows. There's another show on Sunday from 9:30 to 1 and thereafter.
No, I haven't seen it yet. Anything you've seen today that's actually happening? Any incidents that, you know, you think we should...
Not really, no.
Well, that's good. And we've been talking with?
Fred Flintstone.
Thank you, Mr. Flintstone.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, we have a musician man in doing some playing here on the corner. How's it going?
I like the new spots they gave us at the Metro.
Here, you mean on the sidewalk?
No, yeah, on the front of the Metro. There's two of these new...
Disced areas, yeah.
Yes, so musicians now can play in front of the Metro.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, and...
They could play there before, except they get harassed if they did.
But they're not now.
Well, I hope not.
No, we're trying to still get some stuff on the other side of the street because we know street light and we know that, you know, the Catalyst area and that corner, that would be ideal. That would give us a chance to actually be able to make a living out here. We still got some of the spots that, you know, there's a lot of flow of traffic that we just cannot walk by, you know, play by, I should say. Oh, and that 7th Square thing is still going on, so people beware of that.
Yeah, it's true. And we've been talking with...
Chris.
And Chris, any, you know, C.T. Stock died?
No.
C.J. Stock, I'm sorry. Remember C.J.?
The guy with the glasses used to play Take Me Home Country Roads?
Possibly.
Older, kind of cowboy looking, used to sit in a stool in front of that one.
Yeah, yeah, in the parking garage.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah, I knew him.
Is he still around?
No, I haven't seen him.
Maybe I'm thinking of somebody, because there was C.J., I think that was CJ.
It was an older guy, but yeah, he had almost like white hair, and he kind of had a... can't really think of who to compare him to, but yeah.
And I haven't heard of CJ passing on. He would often play across from... I think it was called Clouds. I don't know if it's still called Clouds Restaurant, in the right in the edge of the parking garage, which was technically illegal, but police seemed to... tolerant of that, or sometimes we're tolerant of that. The guy who died was Cosmic Chris, who also was a street guitarist, a well-known figure around here. He actually, the Pacific Trading Company decided they disliked him so much, not sure why, I don't think his guitar playing was pretty good, that they got the police department and the redevelopment agency and Julie Hendy to actually create a forbidden sitting zone near him so that people could not comfortably be there. That was way back in 2002, 2003. If you look at the large planter that's adjacent to Betty's Burgers and the Pacific Trading Company, you'll see that the railing has been moved outward so that you can no longer sit. But you can see where it used to be, so people had actually plenty of seating spaces around there on I guess one of three or maybe four waist-high planters along the Pacific Garden Mall. Garden Mall is, of course, a more term of nostalgia than an accurate description. And I hope folks have been enjoying these interviews because it looks like many of them were played at the end of the last show I did on Sunday, but perhaps the sterling new comments I made add some additional twists to what might otherwise be merely repetitive. Let's see what we got here. Let's have some more from Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, because I was here a lot through 01 and 05.
Now, are you interested in joining a musicians and vendors association that will, shall we say, try to express concerns about its rights downtown, the built expanding space, that sort of thing?
Ooh, expanding space. I like that.
You like that? Well, here's a... You have an email or a number you can be reached at?
Just Pacific Garden Mall.
Well, here's my card in case you have any okay. thoughts or ideas. This is my number, 423-HUFF.
And 423-HUFF.
We've been talking with
Chris.
One more time. On the guitar. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. And walking down toward the Penny Ice Creamery in front of the bookshop Coonerty. There is a table and a lot of Krishna jewelry put out here. And a man doing some Krishna singing, it sounds like, with the secrets of crystal healing, among other things.
I have the secrets of crystal healing. Aho my relations.
Now, I hope you're not seeking any monetary...
There are several experiments you can easily carry out which will help you in your work with crystals. But you must first learn to work with your hands. Crystals are very powerful tools, and it is possible to make mistakes if they are wrongly used.
Now, this man has crystals
or,
displayed all along the planter.
Perfect balance.
Very nicely displayed, I might add.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think so. Colorful display, and... Have any police officers joined any of your Krishna organizations?
The police officers told me that as long as I am in the prayer of the crystal, and I have not separated from the crystal, and I am continuing my belief that I am the crystal, then there shall be no differentiation between the amalgamations that I have created and my own very soul.
That's crystal clear to me. And again, the nature of your crystal offerings is very impressive. It's on a table here in front of this planter. The planter itself has a number of crystal items on it, little stones and various books, as well as a long green tongue reaching out into the sidewalk, a tongue-like cloth. Which
it's
also
a chakra therapy mat.
It's a chakra therapy mat.
For people to sit on and meditate.
Very nice. And so I congratulate you, Swami, or
yes.
on your activities, and hope you are successful in continuing to pursue them.
I am spreading unconditional love.
And, of course, this is a response to the attack on jewelry and gem selling downtown, or handicraft display downtown, which was passed by the Matthews City Council and went into force on June 24th. And I'm surprised that our seller, who has always refused to tell me his name, he's often had some of the biggest crystal displays on Pacific Avenue, I'm surprised that he hasn't been cited for violations of other ordinances, because not because anything he's doing is wrong or bad or even bothers anyone else, but because if the police wanted to, they could go after him on a number of counts, or could have in the past anyway. It's, for example, it's illegal to set up merchandise, even your artwork, on public property on along a planter lip, which is ridiculous, and in fact maybe unconstitutional. So maybe that was one of the reasons that he boldly felt he could do it. They're also limited in having to be inside blue boxes, and I don't know that he was. In any case, more power to him, and more power to all those who are standing up for their rights and standing up for the rights of the community to have access to art, jewelry, handicrafts, political speech of different kinds, and even visible poverty, where people dare to choose to sully the sacred Pacific Avenue commercial lane with a touch of reality.
Non-attachment and healing intentions.
I see. Well, let me add a small donation to your unconditional love deal.
Hallelujah.
You're welcome.
In God we trust.
All others pay cash.
Only way. Hey.
Thank you, Swami. And this, of course, was a prior jeweler who actually was the focus of attention from the city council and critics of jewelers downtown for having displays that went that were too far along. I'm sorry, that involved too many tables. And it was accused of cluttering Pacific Avenue and driving away the musicians, although I never heard a musician claim this. Maybe once, one. And hence they passed the commercial vending law that makes it illegal for people to sell their or display their jewelry. And so he is now adopting a religious approach. Of course, he doesn't realize by displaying his property along the planter, that is a different ordinance violation, but perhaps he will come to face that problem as it comes up. Not that the ordinances have any bearing on meaningful public health and safety concern. And it's none other than the evil Ricardo Lopez sitting on milk crates outside the blue boxes.
We're somewhat near a blue box, and I think that's how the rule goes, is that if you're somewhat near a blue box, yeah, and I understand that it's okay to just paint your own blue boxes, so we'll probably take that option, just carry spray paint with us and spray a new blue box wherever we're at.
We are wild and crazy, Ricardo Lopez. You are, in fact, on the edge. Well, you are in the blue box, except your foot is outside the blue box. And I'm afraid that also the case here,
the
display
device,
I'm afraid there are a number of problems with your situation.
You know, we're hardened criminals here and repeat offenders. We infract often. Yeah.
And that is an additional tightening of the law or change passed on May 24th and implemented or law on June 24th. You can't have anything outside the brass/blue boxes. Brass discs are replacing the blue marks on the sidewalk so that imps and mischievous people like Keith McHenry can't create additional ones. I guess they could if they found some way of creating brass discs and putting them in the sidewalk or I don't know what. In any case, you can't have anything outside the, I guess it's the 4 by 6 foot area, of which there are relatively few along Pacific Avenue. I think there are 26. You say, well, that's quite a number. And the answer is no. In the downtown area that's fairly well traveled, I'd say there are less than 14 or 15. And it's just, there's a kind of a humiliating aspect to it where you're not able to have a kind of a free and easy and natural relationship with the environment and the community. You are sort of pinned to the mat or, you know, pinned to the wall like some sort of butterfly display where you're only allowed to be in these special places as though there was some necessary reason for that when, in fact, it is part of a kind of a very selfish and short-sighted merchant mentality and also a rather cramped and reactionary aesthetic from the city council staff and their backers and the right-wing residential groups like the Take Back Santa Cruz group, although I don't think they took a specific position on this ordinance per se. I think they've had a lower profile mainly because their positions are being taken over and forwarded, as to some extent they always have been, by the city council staff.
We've caused so many infractions. Yeah.
At least repeat defenders of the rights of those on Pacific Avenue.
I've got my Patriot Act is the Bill of Rights. You got that right.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Anything happened today of any note?
Not that I can remember, except we've had really funny stuff with Rangers coming out to our camp and police coming out and telling us that we can't do things that we can do. and then having them change their mind. It's really a big waste of money. Do you think right now is a good time to turn your Gestapo, your killer police loose on an undefended? My house, for example, is, see, we've got one guy with leukemia, one guy who's HIV positive, another guy who's got cancer. Let me see, have I named her? Oh, yeah, and a girl with Lyme disease.
These are all outside.
These are all at my beloved Duck Beach, which many people know, good old Duck Beach.
San Lorenzo River area.
Yes, sir, right in our one little area. So who knows what the other camps have? That's just our little group of friends who all stick together. We're, of course, the more mild-mannered of the crew, and we...
And Ricardo's talking about a homeless encampment, essentially relatively close to town on the San Lorenzo River area.
So that's why we all stick together at that place, because we're not as wild or as rowdy, or, yeah, we all kind of get along and don't fight with each other and keep the place clean, and they do like us because we keep it clean, but as much as they can like homeless people, huh? Yeah, I got a ticket the other day for having bedding out. This in the afternoon, me and Glimmer are just sitting on the blankets as they're raiding, and so they decide, oh, if we had been sitting in the dirt, it would have been better. But since we put out a blanket so that, you know, the darn girls with their quality of life stuff wanting to have a blanket rather than to sit in the mud.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You have a right to sit on a blanket. But particularly since you're not on Pacific Avenue,
right.
Unless it's after 11 o'clock at night. Now,
No, it was not. It was between 8:30 in the morning and 11.
Well, maybe you weren't sneakily waiting until the clock turned 11.
It was like 10:30 or so in the morning, so it was plenty of time. And they decided to give us a ticket anyway, and we were just sitting there. And we're like, holy cow, oh well.
When was this?
Yesterday.
And who were the cops involved?
You know, I don't know. It was Rangers. It was they're training a Ranger, so they decide to give a ticket. You know, for those nuisance tickets, and they know it's just a nuisance. But, you know, I could give a damn because my name's Ricardo Lopez, which is one of the most common names in Spanish. So the longer I leave those infractions on, the more it costs the state of California money. Every time they run any Ricardo Lopez's name, my little piece of electricity has to go in there, too.
How many tickets would you say you've gotten in the last year, Ricardo?
100.
Are you serious? Is that an exaggeration?
It could be an exaggeration, but it's more
a
like
lot of 100 tickets.
Than it's not like 100. Yeah,
it feels like 100.
It feels like it, yeah. 25, maybe. All nonsense ones that I never have to go to court. They just take it from my license. Or it costs them money to write me a ticket, you know? And doesn't cost me a dime, the few minutes of their training new Rangers. You know, there's, I believe, a state right now, if they write bogus tickets like that, the police can be charged and yeah.
I would like that. And we've been talking with?
Ricardo Lopez.
Any other thoughts, Ricardo?
Peace and love, as long as there's a heaven above, y'all.
Thank you, sir.
Loving you, bro. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you so much.
And while it is true that, as has been the case for decades, homeless people ignore these tickets, although some don't, and some take them very seriously, because a number of folks who are outside simply, some people even refuse charity who are outside. They feel it's a matter of maintaining their dignity not to accept charity, and also want to follow the law, if you have a crazy law like the sleeping ban or being in a park after dark being a crime or sitting down on Pacific Avenue in an out-of-the-way spot, but one that's within 14 feet of something or outside one of the boxes is a crime. They want to follow the law, but many don't. And those who don't and treat these tickets as waste paper or TP or whatever, they still have to face the possibility of jail, not through failure to appear, which was the case years ago, but through an ordinance which may be unconstitutional. I don't think it's been challenged or seriously looked at by attorneys the ordinances stated that the two new ordinances, which I've talked about before, are an ordinance that makes it a misdemeanor crime, if the city attorney wants to charge it, if you don't deal with three infractions in a six-month period that are tickets that are given to you. And since people get tickets quite frequently, particularly if the police decide that they have a hard-on for them, so to speak, then you may be charged with maybe facing up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. The second law is that if you have that same situation where you don't deal with three infractions, then every subsequent infraction can be viewed as a misdemeanor, even if it's only an infraction. And I know some people who have been charged with this. I don't know them personally. I've seen their cases. I think I saw them in the court records. And I found myself wondering what the public defenders did with this, because that is often one advantage of having a misdemeanor case charged against you, is you get a free public defender if you are poor, particularly, or in fact only if you're poor, and also you get a jury trial. Of course, what happens is most people are in jail because they can't pay bail, and they decide to do a deal rather than to go to trial. So I don't know that any public defender has ever taken any of these cases to trial, but if they did, it would probably necessarily involve a constitutional challenge to the law, because it turns infraction crimes into misdemeanors, which is kind of a no-no in California. At least that's my understanding of the nature of the infraction crime. The infraction used to be something that, you know, for the advantage of the courts, you don't get, doesn't run up bills for jury trials, they don't have to pay public defenders, but they can't give you jail, they can just give you fines. And the only recourse if you don't pay your fine is to confiscate your property or garnish your wages, not to penalize you with jail. That was the claim of some old-time homeless activists in the early 90s who used that argument successfully in some courts. Red Top Robert Flory, Linda the Lark Edwards, and Wanton Dave Jacobs, for all of you really old-timers who might remember those three. Let's hear more from that Pacific Avenue that you know so well, those of you who live here.
So you're about to, technically woman is about to steal a shopping cart. Tell me more about
this. I am not.
She's not going to do it. All right, we're down on Pacific Avenue, and you mentioned you have some new fans. You have a new group to appreciate, the white-shirted Rangers?
Well, yeah, I guess they are having the Rangers perform the same duties as the regular police officers so they can double their ticket-writing power.
How exciting.
Right. Double the revenue. So it's summertime. It's summertime. People who don't know better to light up his cigarettes.
Summertime. Have they been writing any tickets that you've seen?
Not with my own eyes, but I hear rumored. It's rumored. Been rumored that they do...
They carry weapons, do they?
Seemingly, yes.
Ah, okay. And we've been talking with?
Morgan Green.
Who else would it be? You're in green, or sort of.
Kind of. I'm in the Ren Fairy mood today.
And the who?
I call this my Ren Fairy costume. I wear it when I get to the Ren Fair.
Oh, the Renaissance Fair, of course.
Yes.
What am I thinking? Okay, well, thank you, and I will move on to the public alert section and see what kind of public alerts they've got.
What they've done is come up with some
zones. You're listening to Alex describe his public alert sign.
Just the showing of art. That's not an outright ban, but they have restricted the amount of areas that we're allowed to do that in, and we're also told we can only be there for an hour and cannot come back within 24 hours.
And those who listen to my show regularly know that Alex is a part of the Alex and Joff team that display their paintings down on Pacific Avenue outside the blue boxes as a matter of principle. Actually, where they were was where there used to be blue boxes, but blue boxes were removed as part of the cramp and destroy strategy, as I see it, being used by city staff and the police department and the merchants to lessen the street culture on Pacific Avenue. And Alex and Joff have been arrested, I guess it's four times now. Once in the fall and three times this spring. And there was the most recent arrest, I think, was June 27th or thereabouts. And none of the recent cases have gone to court. Anyway, we'll hear him talking about these issues, because now what he's doing is he and Joff both are using the opportunity to publicize what's going on out there. And they've also actually been sufficiently vocal and expressive in what they're doing. I think their displays are great. They show pictures of people, of them being arrested, of the large numbers of police coming to take them away, and their painting for the crime of being on this spacious Pacific Avenue, but not in exactly the spot where the city says the city staff and council say they have to be. There's an article in the Santa Cruz Weekly, Paint That a Shame, which tries to sort of poo-poo the idea that there's any real problem with the ordinances that are trying to corral them into these little boxes. Paint That a Shame, Just How Restrictive Are the City's Downtown Ordinances, really is an article by Artie Ragian, which essentially kind of counterpoises them. It does give some of their arguments. But he puts, I think it's a he, I'm not sure if Artie is a woman or a man, but or how they identify, if you will. But they say it's their constitutional right, where constitutional right is in quotes, as though it can't really. I mean, that's just what they say. It's a constitutional right. Whereas Artie spends a lot of time talking to the city attorney, who defends this abusively restrictive policy by saying that rights are not being violated because the city has the right to restrict time, place, and manner. He uses a series of legalisms that have been okayed by conservative courts in the past that say the Constitution does allow First Amendment, but only it can be restricted and when it can be done, where it can be done, and how it can be done, which may be true in theory. I mean, it is true in theory. That's what the lawyers argue back and forth. But really, the real issue here is whether there's a need to regulate. And that has never been shown to any extent, other than the sort of NIMBY, not in my backyard, not in front of my store, not in my town, I don't like the way you look, a series of concerns that couldn't be expressed openly as legitimate arguments, but were really the motivation behind the so-called, oh, there's a trip and fall hazard, oh, it has a cluttery look, they're selling stolen merchandise. There was no stats were ever presented to document any of these claims. It's just they implemented the ordinances. And this isn't, of course, at all a part of Artie's article here. In fact, he buttresses the city attorney's icy bogus case. Outside experts, Artie writes, seem to agree that there's nothing unconstitutional about what the city is doing as long as it provides enough space for artists and activists. And the question of whether it's enough space to corral people into these smaller boxes, which they have to compete with musicians and panhandlers and other people who display their discs and performers, and then have to move along every hour on top of that and then go 100 feet away, which probably excludes a number of the areas because 100 feet is quite a ways. It's at least half a block. It's pretty damn restrictive. And the reality is it's never been shown why. And, of course, that doesn't concern our friend Artie and his article. I think I don't know if he's directly offended in this Paint That a Shame. But he clearly isn't a defender of these two artists, Alex and Joff. I think I'll do, I may do more of an analysis of this on Sunday if it tickles my fancy. You can find it in the current issue of the Good Times, and I encourage people to write in and suggest that he really consider that Pacific Avenue is supposed to be a public space, not a space, a heavily regulated area. particularly given its broad domain where you don't really need massive regulation. There is not a big public safety problem. There's no health problem. The only problem is the commercial greed and fears and aesthetic dictates that some people in power want to impose and have so far successfully imposed. Let's hear Alex talk about it. He and Joff have been educating the community about the kinds of abuses that they've suffered from the police, where their artwork has been damaged, where they have, maybe it was the display device, where they're facing hundreds of dollars in fines, but they refuse to back down. They think it's a matter of constitutional right. Of course, they haven't gone to court and lost a case yet, and I'm afraid that when the courts play lick-lick, woof-woof, an obedient puppy to the police department and the city staff and the city council, they're going to be, it'll be a harder thing for them to come out again.
In 100 feet of this spot, among some additional restrictions. The reasoning for our arrest has been told to us a couple of ways. We were protesting this ordinance, and we were also protesting the fact that we're required to sign contracts with the city related to punishments that we're to receive because of our conduct outside of these zones. Our protest of that and the refusal to sign contracts has been given as the reason that we were arrested. However, in times previous, they've told us the department policy is to mail our citations to the city attorney and, quote, see how far they want to push it. So from our perspective, perhaps the arrest is pushing it. We're not really sure. But either way, it's a result of our protest against this ordinance and the fact that we've been told that our rights as citizens have been really heavily restricted or outright banned, depending on the nature of activity. It's no longer allowed to display crystals, rocks, geodes, or, quote, jewelry. And for a lot of individuals out here that I've spoken to, this affects them. Well, they've been told they can't do that at all, and they're saying that their activity is, in some cases, their expression, or in some cases, their religious beliefs in action, or both. And that's just individuals speaking for themselves, and that's only what I've heard just myself out here. We're all, you know, speaking for ourselves, as am I, but this is certainly something that affects a lot more people than just me and my friend here, so we're letting people know about what's happening. If you want to look at something a little more fun, the backside's got some nice colorful stuff on it that's a little more fun and kind of what brought about some of this in the first place.
And Alex has a double-sided A-frame display device and can seemingly talk for some minutes without even breathing, or so it feels. One side is taken up with photos of the various arrests from August 20th, April 16th, May 1st, and June 27th, as well as areas when they were not, times when they were not arrested, which I guess he is putting up here so as to sort of demonstrate, I guess, selective enforcement at different times, that they're not really getting any kind of consistent treatment from the police department. The other side of the A-frame contains his artwork, which is the whole purpose of his being out here. And right next, adjacent to his A-frame display is Joff's A-frame display.
Oh, yeah, buddy, you too.
And it's Gnarly Works, which has prints for $10 with a sign on the table. Hey there, Gnarly Works man for Free Radio. How are things going?
I'm doing pretty good, yeah, man. Today is pretty cold, but yeah, I got my sweater today, so it's not that bad. Yeah,
wear your coat.
Yeah, business ain't that bad. It's pretty slow. Or not actually. It's pretty busy, but it's not that bad.
Have you been approached by any of the officers of the so-called law?
I have not, actually. They've been walking past me, but the gentlemen right next to me have gotten arrested multiple times.
But not today.
Not today, no.
Not yesterday.
Not yesterday, no. Actually,
the last time was June 27th.
I believe so, yeah, by the posters right here. Yeah.
Have you been spoken to by either the, I guess there are rangers in white walking up and down now?
Not by them, but some hospitality before, but they haven't really said anything. Not too drastic as these guys over here.
Now, describe the kind of work you're doing here. I see you have a Life's a Trip, Eat Me, Sleep When You're Dead, Take Me Home, a series of people's faces melting, large eyeballs. What's this about?
It's my imagination. These ideas just come into my head, and I need to let them out. Like, don't know, I like making things that pop, making people stop and like, hey, like, what's this? What's the meaning behind it? Not just like a little scenery with like a guy in a bow or something that you see every day. It's mostly something different. And I like making stuff that makes people like ask questions about. They're like, where did you get this from? Like, how did this come up? Not just like, oh, I seen that over there, or I've seen that on a shirt somewhere. It's something more original that I like. Yeah.
How long have you been doing it?
Out here or selling or painting?
Both.
I've been selling out here for about like almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been painting for about like 6 years and drawing ever since I was like a little kid, like my action figures and all that.
Have you had prints, $10, the sign you have on here for the last 3 years, or is that a new development?
New development. Well, the prints have always been here, but I've been adding to my collection over the years, so...
What about the sign, prints, $10?
That's always been here. Yeah, I need to let people know, yeah.
And you haven't been hassled for that?
No, I have not, actually. No.
Host haven't said, you can only do it for a donation or anything of this.
Oh, no, nothing yet.
Interesting. Yeah. This was even in the last 3 years.
Yeah. So nothing so far. They've told me to, like, be in the box and everything, so I have to do
the red box. I mean, the blue box.
But I'm like, I have these two easels out, so I don't know. They haven't bothered me yet.
Outside the blue box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We've been talking with?
What?
What's your name?
Anthony.
Thanks, Anthony. You should be on free radio tomorrow morning.
Oh, nice. Sweet. Hey, how are you guys doing?
Would you call yourself a juggler or a magician? What would you call yourself?
Magician.
And do you have a stage name?
My name is Hudson Lee. That's just the name I go by. It's just my real name.
And Hudson, I see you have an ironing board properly set up around a chain inside the sacred brass/blue boxes.
Yes, sir.
And you're also receiving donations with a satchel outside the blue box.
It's very risque.
You're kind of pushing the envelope.
I like to live on the edge.
But you're also giving away things. You have a bag of food to be passed on.
Yes, sir.
And somebody punched you in the nose. You have a nosebleed happening here.
You know, let's go with that. That's a better story.
How long have you been out here today?
I've been out here since 2:30.
You have some rings in your hand and some rings on your wrist or your arm. What do you do with these rings?
Oh, it's the old Chinese linking ring trick, you know? You put the rings together, you take the rings apart, magically, of course. Yeah.
Can you make these ridiculous laws disappear, perhaps?
The ridiculous street laws?
You know? I'm hoping that you might be the man.
I kind of like to ignore them and hope they just go away.
You ignore your rights and they'll go away? That's what I think.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what happens, isn't it? With the street, you know, I understand what they're trying to do, and I see how it's getting in the way of things, and I see how it's getting in the way of our rights. I appreciate that people are doing something about it. I appreciate that there are people lobbying around it, or lobbying against it, I should say.
Now, would you like to be a part of a vendors association, a performers and vendors group, where I'm gathering names and emails for people who might want to get in touch with each other and support each other?
Well, if you have any contact information, I'd love to get it.
Okay. And we've been talking with?
Andrew Hudson Lee.
Thank you. Andrew.
Exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe
so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. A cat with the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Think of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, no, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Barry McGuire, Eve of Destruction, early 60s song. Some of it's outdated. You can both vote and kill with the military these days. And I guess, well, integration isn't so much the word as stop killing black people, OU police officers, and stop actually killing generally without any kind of accountability. And that's, as I mentioned before, a topic that is... it comes... strikingly into awareness before it blinks out again and we continue wandering around in our various trances because of the widespread video capability of smartphones and iPods and other devices. Some really horrible stuff comes up, and there are some actual people who've hit the streets in Baton Rouge and other cities. Again, across the country, not very well publicized. I should be actually looking in on that, and maybe I will, while I play some more of the relatively tame scene here in Santa Cruz. If you have any thoughts or comments or experiences you want to pass on regarding anything, give me a call, 427-3772, 427-3772, and I'll answer. I even be able to hear your ring when you... calling on the phone line.
In front of Marini's ice cream parlor, and there's a small illegal table here which says free face painting. Have you been painting many faces, sir?
Actually, not yet.
And how long you been set up?
How long have I been here?
Here for?
How long have we been here for? Like 20 minutes?
And how is the public treating you?
We met some nice people. We were talking for a while. Then.
But no painting yet.
Well, actually, we were in Santa Cruz earlier. And then we came here.
Well, this is still Santa Cruz, you know.
Oh, I mean, at the boardwalk beach.
How'd that go? Not so good?
I asked some rangers there if I could do this.
And they said...
And then when we talked about, like, when we mentioned, like, donations, yeah, we weren't, like, they weren't sure, so we came here.
They said, but did they tell you to leave, or they told you they didn't know?
They told us we probably need a license.
I don't think there is such a thing. But...
yeah, I don't think they want to, like, give us the authority to, you know, say yes and then get in trouble for it later. So.
But you haven't... Have any police officers or rangers come to you here?
Oh, actually, there were rangers right here, but they didn't actually bother, you know, talking to us. So I don't think they're...
guys in white?
I'm sorry, what's that?
White outfits?
I believe so. Yeah, they were like they said the city rangers.
Interesting.
Yeah. Clothes.
And what's your name?
My name's Young.
I'm Robert. And who's this?
This is Sejin.
Sejin.
Hey, Sejin. Robert. Is this something you've done a lot of, the two of you, or?
Actually, we've just started. Yeah. So.
Well.
This is our like second time. We first done it at some church event. Then this is first time doing it our own outside. Yeah, any event.
Well, I wish you both luck with this.
Thank you very much.
And paint on.
We will do that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Should be on Free Radio tomorrow.
Okay.
And here we have a guitar woman out in front of Surf Life, close to the Santa Cruz Roast Coffee Company, Coffee Roasting Company, outside of a blue box, but also with a display device on the ground instead of 18 inches above the ground or whatever the sacred distance is. She's playing so quietly I can barely hear her, and the wind, of course, is rather hefty and blowing everybody away. Sing louder so we can record you.
Don't walk away from me, my love. Don't walk away from me.
What do we call that?
I guess it's Don't Walk Away. I'm just making it up right now.
That's good.
Thank you.
Original invention. What's your name?
My name is Anna.
And Anna, how long have you been guitaring?
I've been playing for 3 years.
On the street or just general?
In general, yeah.
Is this your first?
No. I have a handful of times I've been doing this.
Any hassles from police or the new white-clothed ranger?
Not lately.
That's good.
Not harassment, but just them telling me I can't, like, sit on the bench, you know? Mm-hmm. You have a limited space where you can
where you it's can important play. That the merchants have all the area and you have very little.
Right? Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
He was appreciating this. Your
thank
singing.
You so much.
He was telling me he liked it.
Oh, nice. Wait, what's your name?
I'm Robert.
Hi, Robert.
I do a radio show.
Oh, yeah? That's
you're
cool.
You're going to be on the air if you don't watch out.
Yeah, cool.
I'd give you my card, but I haven't got any cards left.
Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
It's 101.3. It'll be tomorrow morning. So.
Oh, cool. That sounds exciting.
Well, you want to sing some more?
Sure.
Go ahead. Of your original composition, perhaps?
That is my first composition.
That was your first composition? Wow, so we were here at the beginning.
I'm in the beginning stages, yeah. But I know one more song.
Go for it.
Okay, let's see. This is a Jody Messina song, and it's called Bye Bye. Oh, let's see. Boy, you sure look good there, standing in the doorway in the sunset light. Maybe I read you wrong, thinking you could be my Mr. Right. I was putting my heart and soul on the line. Said you needed some time to make up your mind. Well, it's been long enough. The time is up. Bye bye, love. I'll catch you later. I've got a lead foot down on my accelerator and the rear view mirror torn off. I will never look back, and that's a fact. I've tried, oh, I can't imagine. I begged and pleaded in true lover's fashion. I've got pride. I'm taking it for a ride. Bye-bye. Don't think, oh, those tears are gonna keep me here like they've done before. You'll find what's left of us in a cloud of dust off Highway 4. Baby, what did you expect me to do? Just sit around and wait on you. I'm through watching you just skate around the truth, and I know it sounds trite. I've seen the light. Bye-bye, love. I'll catch you later. I've got a lead foot down on my accelerator and the rearview mirror torn off. I will never look back, and that's a fact. I've tried all I can imagine. I begged and pleaded in true lover's fashion. I've got pride. I'm taking it for a ride. Bye bye.
And we've been listening to the singing of...
I'm sorry, say that again.
And you are...
Oh, my name is Anna Walters.
And Anna, how can people hear your stuff? Are you online?
No, I just sing on the street.
You're
here.
Just on the street.
Yeah.
Got to catch you and get lucky when they're not arresting you.
Yeah.
Or ticketing you.
Hope not.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening.
And people will hear this tomorrow on Free Radio.
That's so awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for making it available.
And as you can hear, most of these things were, these clips were, well, they're from early July, so we've had to delay them, and that often happens. My apologies to folks who wanted to hear them, haven't been able to hear them, but they are archived. These shows are archived at huffsantacruz.org. And if you go there and you, well... If you want to find out where they actually are, we don't have indexes yet set up for most of the shows, at least most of the recent shows. But if you contact me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and you want to hear yourself or know where you're on the air, I will try to find it for you. In the meantime, maybe you can take some comfort in knowing that you're providing information, entertainment, education for other people. And... nobody's making any money off this. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. So, a couple of stories from the paper that interested me. Uruguay. Rosana Rilla could sell marijuana under Uruguay's pioneering law. Uruguay is a South American country, a little one, that lets pharmacies distribute pot. But she says there's no way she will. In her 28 years as a pharmacist, she has been beaten, dragged across the floor, and threatened by thieves at gunpoint and with a grenade. She fears that selling marijuana would only make her store a bigger target for robbers and burglars. You see their faces, and you can tell right away that they are not consumers who are here just to buy marijuana, Rilla said about the suspicious people who have recently been coming into her Montevideo pharmacy asking if she sells pot. She isn't alone in avoiding the government's marijuana program. Most of the country's pharmacists haven't signed on, citing security concerns and complaining of paperwork, cost increases, or opposition from customers to selling legalized pot. Uruguay legalized the cultivation and sale of marijuana in 2013 in a bid to create the world's first government-regulated national marketplace for pot. The goal was to fight rising homicide and crime rates associated with drug trafficking in the South American country. But while the government wants to start selling marijuana at pharmacies in the coming weeks, so far only 50 out of the 1,200 pharmacies are registered, stoking a debate over how the drug should be distributed. Drug. Sorry, I don't like it described as a drug. I don't see, I guess tobacco is a drug, but we don't hear it described that way, do we? I don't see the need to get into a conflict with people who are already selling weed in the neighborhood, said Marcelo Trujillo, who owns three pharmacies in the Montevideo Cerro neighborhood. I just don't want to expose myself or my employees, he said. Next to him, a worker repaired a glass that was shattered during a recent robbery attempt. The law allows for growing of pot by licensed individuals, the formation of growers and users clubs, and the sale by pharmacies of 40 grams of marijuana a month to registered users. While the plan has been widely applauded globally and seen as going beyond marijuana legislation in the U.S. states of Colorado and Washington, most Uruguayans oppose it. My customers generally don't agree with the plan, said Isabel Regent, head of the Association of Interior Pharmacies, which represents businesses outside the capital of Montevideo. Besides the fear of robberies, enrolling in a system means a hike in costs and having to be up to date with all the paperwork demanded by the health ministry, and not all pharmacies are in a condition to do this. Regent owns a pharmacy in Punta del Este, an exclusive seaside resort, where tens of thousands of tourists from neighboring Argentina come to vacation each year. But she decided not to enroll in the government plan. She wouldn't be able to sell pot to foreign tourists because the law only allows sales to Uruguayan citizens and legal residents over age 18. Pharmacies in three of the four Uruguayan states bordering Brazil have also declined to enroll in the plan. No studies have been conducted to see if pharmacies would face extra risks from selling pot, but most feel it's just not worth the risk. Fernando Gil of the Interior Ministry's Communications Office said that no pharmacist has reported any threats to police. Some pharmacists say their lack of interest in participating goes beyond security concerns. I oppose it as a matter of principle, said Julio Gadea. I've been a pharmacist for 40 years. Pharmacies were created to sell medicines, not drugs. I thought that's what most medicines are, but just my thought. Experts say delays in the marijuana initiative stem from the fact that no other country has attempted such an ambitious endeavor and that authorities still lack detailed plans and rules for regulating the market. Several of the pharmacists interviewed said they hadn't ruled out signing on later if the program is successful. And I remind you, the Cannabis Advocates Association is still meeting up in Boulder Creek for those of you who want to check it out. And again, that's happening at the Boulder Creek Pizza and Pub, and I don't even think you have to buy pizza and or booze. You just walk on in and find out what they're doing to make sure that the marijuana cultivation situation doesn't get heavily restricted or shut down by the supervisors intent on essentially implementing a kind of prohibitionist mentality masquerading as a concern about environment and neighbors' complaints about smells and things, none of which they've documented in any meaningful way, of course. But they're simply operating off of, the loudest voices or the voices that are most influential to them. Or I'm not sure even how they're operating, but I've never seen any documentation for this stuff. I hope at some point, maybe on Sunday, to be playing some of Sheriff Jim Heartless's stuff. His real name is Hart, of course, where he was speaking before a bunch of marijuana growers and other interested community members up in Felton, and seemed to act as though the law that hasn't yet been passed by the supervisors is already law, and he was going to help everybody understand the law so they could easily slip right into it, sort of slip your cuffs on, folks, so they're really quite comfortable. I'm still hoping at some mythical date in the future to get some stats on the actual use of medical marijuana in the county of Santa Cruz. It's the number of marijuana growers and what kind of growing is actually done here in terms of numbers per year, amount of not so much the cost or the profit that's made from it, but the amount of marijuana available, because my interest has always been in making sure that low-income people have marijuana available. And that's something that, you hear dispensaries. The only two dispensaries in, I think there are two in Santa Cruz. Haven't heard much from either of them recently. Although, I maybe only one left. I understand Greenway closed down. And haven't done an update on that myself. Another thing to be done. And there are, I think, 13 dispensaries in the county who are, will be represented, I believe, to some extent, at this Cannabis Advocates Alliance meeting tonight up at the Boulder Creek Pizza and Pub, which goes on till 9, so you still have an hour and a half if you want to jump on your bike and pedal up there. Wow. I guess what I want to look over is read you a little something from this rather nasty story from Beverly Hills in the Mercury News yesterday. Did city go too far? This is very rare to actually have a pro-homeless article. What this really is it's a defending one homeless man. But it really is kind of iconic and emblematic because what it really, this is a position that almost any homeless person could be in, and probably most homeless people are in Santa Cruz as well as in the more upscale Beverly Hills, because Santa Cruz is becoming very, very upscale, though it may not look like it. It certainly costs like it. This is an LA Times story by Gail Holland. Beverly Hills accused of driving out homeless man. George Seville slept on a cot in a downtown homeless shelter. In the morning, he would catch the bus to Beverly Hills. There, Seville's wit and wide knowledge of news, entertainment, and sports drew a circle of admirers, including a half dozen people who took their morning coffee at Earth Cafe, spelled URTH. The cafe owners supported him. Sports stars such as Lamar Odom and Jason Kidd, apologies for any mispronunciation, stopped by for daily tidbits of information. Arab royals from the Beverly Wilshire Hotel asked him to pose in their selfies, Seville supporters said. He's smart. He has historical references, said Maria Belknap, a business manager and Earth patron. He knows the LA Times and New York Times inside and out, and he can talk about everything. At best, he is charming. At worst, he is harmless, said television host Larry King, who eats breakfast nearby and has slipped him cash on occasion. Every community has a panhandler, and Beverly Hills is not so far above it. City officials, however, call Seville an opportunist and aggressive panhandler, and considered drawing up a shame list to pressure cafe owners to stop catering to him. After a run-in with the city-funded private patrols, known to locals as Green Shirts, that's their version of the hosts, I suppose, Seville was charged with two misdemeanors and ordered to stay away from the restaurant. Seville's friends call the charges bogus and merely a ploy to drive the 57-year-old homeless man out of town. What you mounted is an extrajudicial squad of Green Shirts who are there to clear the streets of undesirables. David Lyle, president of a television and digital content production association, a producers association, told the Beverly Hills Human Rights Commission in May. And that's sort of exactly the same kind of thing I've been saying about Santa Cruz, except you have people with far more prestigious positions, more money, more titles in front of their names saying so, mainly because they've had personal relationships with this guy. They have a certain basic sense of fairness that is offended by what the city is doing through its Green Shirts program, through its courts, and through its city officials. That's my analysis of that. But let's hear some more of Gail Holland's story. At a separate hearing, James Latta, the city's Human Services Administrator, countered that. This is always a joke because this is the Human Services Administrator who's supposed to be defending human services. He actually is attacking this guy, Seville. And what he says is, if it's someone that wanted our help and needed help, we've got it for him. But this individual doesn't want it. So, in other words, you take our charity, you support our poverty pimpery, you allow yourself, and some people would say this, to be humiliated by taking that kind of charity, or we'll kick you out of town and claim you are service resistant. Again, that's my commentary. Seville's clash with officials raises questions about how far cities can go to clear public spaces of indigents, and what obligation, if any, homeless people have to accept services and shelter. To clear cities of indigents sounds like some kind of, you know, illness or plague or something. Human beings who are poor. Indigents is a sort of a negative term that says people who can't pay. Indigent. But they're not taking up, they're not stealing any services. They're not taking anything away. In fact, they're providing things. And they're actually allowing these wealthy people to feel good about themselves, which actually may be a questionable service. Seville recently received head injuries from a fall on Skid Row and remains hospitalized. His friends in Beverly Hills are trying to get his cases dropped and find him housing. They treat me like I'm one of them, which I really am one of them, just not the money-wise, Seville said. Beverly Hills has a generous homeless services budget, more than $800,000 for at most several dozen unsheltered people, but officials can't give homeless people housing because they don't have any. That sounds like Santa Cruz. Why, there are a lot more people here. The city controls a single unit in a homeless housing project in Los Angeles and has funded others all outside Beverly Hills. Goaded by the city's golden triangle of ultra-lux businesses, the city a year ago launched the $500,000 Ambassador Program. The 21, quote, ambassadors dressed in green polo shirts, black pants and hats guide tourists around and patrol garages and, quote, aggressive panhandling in business districts. In other words, they are the eyes and ears of the police force. They are snitches, snoops, and scabs here. I don't know, scabs might not be the right word, although I guess they're taking the jobs of police officers. They're low-paid cops in some respects, just as the hosts were something similar here. The program is run by Block by Block, a private company that provides cleanup crews, that's clean out the homeless crews, and patrols for 72 districts nationwide, including Santa Monica, West Hollywood, and Old Pasadena. Lata, that's the human services sellout guy, said ambassadors find shelter for homeless people, and business owners said they've seen them show compassion. The group has also helped send panhandlers out of town. I can't tell you what a joy it was to hear that West Hollywood, well, not a joy, but that West Hollywood, while I was homeless, went from 42 to 88 people, and our homeless count went from 29 to 14 because of the ambassador team, Lata said at the Human Relations Commission's April meeting. In other words, he's glad that his ambassadors were able to bully and intimidate people out of his area. People have a perfect right to use those sidewalks and streets, just as poor people in Santa Cruz do as well. Seville grew up in Rialto, coached Little League, and said he worked for years in aerospace manufacturing. Seville's the guy they're going after. He was in prison several times for drug sales and possession between 1991 and 2012. Records show the friends say that doesn't bother them. George's life has been disrupted for so long he's gotten used to it, Lyle said. Seville said homelessness persists because it takes so long to get into housing, adding, you'd be surprised how long the waiting list is to be poor. Seville said he began hanging out in Beverly Hills 5 years ago. In October, the security crews started standing eyeball to eyeball around him, and two or three at a time, Lyle said, which is the experience of numerous homeless people in Santa Cruz and certainly homeless activists when we were tabling on Pacific Avenue some years back. Nowadays in Santa Cruz they use a somewhat more, I don't want to say restrained and refined approach. It's a more concealed approach. So, for instance, on July 4th, there was a huge number of calls for service and citations given in Santa Cruz compared to, let's say, Scotts Valley, Felton, or the rest of the county. And I haven't yet researched and calculated how disproportionate it was, but on first reading it looked pretty damn disproportionate. And so what's happened is the police are now facilitating and perhaps encouraging, as Ken Deeg has been doing against MH Ken and against the Homeless Lack of Services Center. He's a police officer, Santa Cruz police officer, but goes door to door rounding up kind of bigots as best he can to sign petitions to cut back on the rights of these groups, on the services that are provided, and on the rights of homeless people even to park in the area. And we have that same situation here, you know, in Santa Cruz. So on July 4th, what you've got is instead of massive cops showing up in massive numbers as they have done on occasion during, Halloween and New Year's Eve, they show up, they simply come and write citations based upon this network of Take Back Santa Cruz-like complaints that are suddenly being put out against sleeping and so forth. This is mentioned at some specificity and detail in a second article in the Good Times, which is called, it's all about Lighthouse Field, actually. It's all about the homeless in Lighthouse Field. It's being presented as some kind of it's not quite put as, let's save Lighthouse Field by driving away the homeless, but it's it does sort of, it uses Lighthouse Field as the place where homeless folks are littering, urinating, defecating, camping, and Mike Rotkin, who lives up there, is letting us all know about it. He's the former mayor and council member and bigot. I have to say that is really what he has become, as a West Side, if not property owner, acting like a West Side property owner. The notion that it's okay to slander and slur people who have no legal place to be by claiming that they're pooing and peeing when the city goes to great trouble to shut restrooms, not only at night, but as it did with the Freedom Sleepers on Tuesday, not to open them until after the Freedom Sleepers are completely gone, or at least relatively late in the morning from what they'd previously done. They used to open them definitely by 8 o'clock, but the bathrooms were not open at 8 when I was sleeping there on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. This article has a similar sort of a smearish slant to it. It's by a person named Cara Guzman, who didn't seem to be... Oh, she did consult a few Freedom Sleepers. She consulted Keith McHenry and a few others, and good for her for doing that. But mostly, there's not much real understanding that all the bathrooms except for one porta potty are shut at night citywide, and that there has been a movement throughout the last 4 or 5 years from right-wing bigoted NIMBY groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Neighbors, Downtown Association, and the police department acting in conjunction to create a new criminal jacket for homeless people so as to justify restricting and deporting them, or making it so inhospitable that they leave because these good gentry who live in their homes are more concerned about losing their bikes in bike thefts than homeless people losing their lives outside. Not that I want to lose anything of mine. I get very cranky when anything of mine is missing. But it's just simply a false narrative that is being presented. And it's being furthered in this issue of the Good Times. So how can homeless Lighthouse Field be saved from the menace of the homeless is the subtext of this article. And there's no proposal that a bathroom be opened there. There's no proposal that a campground be opened where people can go, I would say, encourage them not to camp out in the wilderness areas, relative wilderness areas of Lighthouse Field, not that wildernessy, but somewhat compared to the downtown or the residential neighborhoods. And then it continues this illusion of there actually being services for homeless people to go to when they essentially all walk in services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call it, down on Coral Street, were shut down last summer and have never reopened in spite of a $3 million budget because they want to lure federal and state funding with a pathway to housing claim. And therefore, the idea of emergency shelter no longer appeals to them. I'm no fan of the kind of emergency shelter that's been provided in Santa Cruz, but the notion of taking away emergency shelter and continuing to criminalize people under the sleeping ban and then claiming that homeless people are service resistant because they won't go to services. Well, that's not the specific claim of this article. The specific sentence I object to is the first morning they found 15 homeless people. These are the rangers running around giving tickets, directing them to services and issuing citations. There are no services to direct them to as far as housing or shelter goes, particularly not between the months of April and November. So this is a series of lies in a nice, friendly, good times, whoopie-doo publication. State crews are ill-equipped to deal with the waste left by illegal campers. Well, they could open up their bathrooms. Nah, don't want to do that. We have that anti-homeless maestro who masqueraded as progressive for years in Santa Cruz on homeless issues, John Laird. He actually didn't masquerade much. He was kind of outspoken. He was the mayor in Santa Cruz, member of Progressive Coalition. He was a gay assembly person for Annie. He then became secretary for natural resources, according to this article, and oversees the Department of Parks and Recreation. Looks like he's up to the same old tricks or the same old shit that he was doing in Santa Cruz years ago. He wanted to, you know, he has some legitimate concerns and interests. I understand he's furthered gay rights in numerous ways as an assembly person, and that's commendable. But he also wanted to arrange for the city to buy Lighthouse Field and to be able to have it for itself. And that's not bad either. But I also remember his behavior toward the homeless community, how he adopted restrictive policies at city council to shut them down, refused to consider the kinds of, even discuss the kinds of changes that other cities such as Santa Barbara, actually is what I'm thinking of, were changing in the 80s around the sleeping and camping ordinances. It allowed people at least a respite. And how he colluded with this fantasy of there being services when his co-conspirator, Marty Wormhout, did something similar, shutting down the idea of any kind of modification of police crackdown on homeless people, instead giving them little pamphlets about imaginary places to go where they got to. There's no shelter at the River Street shelter. There was 14 beds and a waiting list, and there were hundreds of homeless people. And still, this is the case in Santa Cruz and in many other cities, but it's Santa Cruz we have to be concerned with because we live here. And this article is full of this kind of problem, that it furthers this phony narrative of the homeless problem. It kind of reminds me, as I said before, of the Jewish problem that was described by Nazis in World War II prior to it also. I mean, you know, they didn't originally start out by going for extermination. They were just talking about this as being they saw it as a racial element. But this, in Santa Cruz, it's described as an aesthetic element, a safety element, an economic element. It's the foreigner, the stranger, the poor person is going to steal all my stuff. The drug war, when there's no real meaningful approach to real drug problems, either to rehabilitate individually or to change the whole fundamental system so you stop creating a profit-making system for hard drugs. And Cynthia Matthews in this article is doing a lot of ducking. She is. She talks about the RV oversized vehicle parking ordinance, which was passed, which I challenged before the Coastal Commission staff recently, which has delayed it for, I think, a month or two. We'll see. But essentially means that no homeless person in an RV will be allowed to get a permit in Santa Cruz to park at night. They're going to have to leave the city every night, whereas those who live here, who are residents or who are renters, will be able to issue permits to their friends who are visiting and so forth. It's part of this whole permit parking scam that Matthews pushed two decades ago, essentially to criminalize poor people in vehicles in the neighborhoods at night when they have this permit parking stuff. And she's using this dodge that talks about the increase in citations, which this article points out probably accurately. The number of citations between 2012 and to 2014 has increased sixfold. That's a huge number. It's six times as many as before. And that's due, she said, to public complaints. And what are those complaints and how are they happening? I don't have the documentation because the police department doesn't give it to us. But I've got to suggest that it may be that organized groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and the police department and a kind of a network are encouraging the community to phone in, and the police department is, it had this going for several years, illegal campsites. Not because they have any alternatives, but because this is your chance to kick those guys and gals out. Get rid of the poor people that way. And it's pretty disgusting. But and Matthews, the mayor, and she's running for re-election, please don't vote for her, is suggesting that, oh, it's not that we're directing our police or our rangers to go after homeless people. It's just the public complaints are making us do this. But, of course, the main ordinances that are being used for these public complaints have nothing to do with health and safety. They have to do with laws that Matthews and her majority on the city council held in place, like the sleeping ban, like the closing of the parks after dark. Those are the two primary laws that are used to complain about homeless people around. And then, of course, because of these laws, homeless people go camp and sleep on private property because they're going to get hassled anyway, so they might as well just find a place that looks secluded. And if it's public or private, who cares? There's no legal places to go. You go where you can. So there's a lot of apologetics here. Intending to maintain this veneer in this Santa Cruz Weekly article, Field Goals, it's called. Ain't That a Shame, is the other article, Paint That a Shame, actually, the one attacking artists Alex and Joff. So I tend to expect pretty much this kind of stuff from the good times, so not surprised. What I can say to folks is to fight back against this is the bigger challenge. And as a HUF member, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, I've been doing it for a couple of decades with small protests and demonstrations, tabling hopefully accurate information that counters the bigotry and NIMBYism that is in the community. But I guess my latest interest is in hoping that people will get together for some sort of response to support the active street culture that's now being threatened, for sure, on Pacific Avenue. As well as, of course, the attack on homeless people citywide for basic needs they have, such as sleeping and defecating and urinating, and I guess eating is a minor issue. I want to remind you, for those of you who are listening, you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Actually, eating is not a minor issue. They've cut off meals at a number of places, too. It's becoming increasingly onerous and limited to use meal services that used to be here. And it all seems part of the word conspiracy may cause some people to say, here's another wingnut talking. But it certainly seems a coalition of interests or a coalition of activity by various groups operating in the same general direction with the same general purpose, to get rid of homeless people from Santa Cruz by driving them out and by increasing the hostile attitudes toward them as manifested in a number of different ways. So Uncle Dennis, who would normally be coming in at 8 o'clock, is not coming in tonight. He's asked me to put on some music and also generously given me the option to take a little extra time, which I'm going to do because I like to talk forever. That's one thing. But another is I have other people talking that I think I've promised them or suggested they're likely to be able to hear themselves on the radio or have other people hear them. So we're going to hear some more from Pacific Avenue last Saturday.
And that singer was Outside of a Box, and as I mentioned, had the display device, i.e. her donation can on the sidewalk. Actually, that's not illegal if she's inside a box. If she's a musician, perhaps a performer. Now, here's a group of children. Looks like six kids. It's a cousin band that plays covers and originals, but they're, of course, illegally situated, and I would imagine there's no permit on this.
Do you see it on this one?
He's holding up cards.
Did you say yes to this one?
And asking
okay.
people
and not on that one. And you see it on
whether their number, their birthday is
okay.
on some of the various cards.
Do you see your birthday on this card?
No.
Do you see it on this one?
There's about 18 numbers on each card.
Do you see it on this one?
These are small.
Do you see it on this
5x6 index cards?
And do you see it on this one?
No.
Is it September 12th?
Yeah.
Wow, that's right after 9/11.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Would you like to go?
No, I'm good.
I'm good.
You
want to
do it? Okay, do you see your birth month here?
No.
You see it here?
No.
And you get the idea.
Yes.
You see it here? Seems like it's a name.
A quick interview with this magical number man. What's your name, sir? If you wish to give it.
I'm Kip.
Of course you are. And Kip, you know, I about a year ago you were working to keep an eye on out-of-bounds police action in Santa Cruz?
Well, I wouldn't say I was doing that necessarily, but I was definitely not taking any shit regarding the enforcement of laws that weren't actually real, such as loitering laws being enforced beyond what they actually are composed of and stuff like that. That's all I did. You know?
I just remember you're looking at the Cafe Pergolesi situation and the folks hanging out there across the street at the parking lot. And
well, there was a problem at Pergolesi's. I mean, it still exists to some level, and it's a problem that the community has to actually have an open dialogue on in order to come to some agreement on. We can't solve the problem if we ignore half of the parties that are involved in the problem, right? And so it seems like people are getting shut out of the conversation and then forced to essentially hang out in people's way because there's no public hangout space in Santa Cruz downtown.
Now, have things changed in the last year since you've been gone in any way?
Yeah, they've mostly gotten worse.
And how does that manifest itself?
Well, I mean, the art is dead downtown. The usual hangout spots where you would see travelers or, you know, hippies, you now see I would call it a worse crowd of people, a more violent crowd of people. I would say that it's people coming in to fill the vacuum, and I'd say people are moving in from all over the place, and you're getting a kind of a survival of the fittest race to the bottom taking place with the homeless population here, where there's not many resources to go around. I mean, there's more than most places, but there's still a finite amount of resources, and the people that make those that get the resources are not the people that need them. They're just the people who are fit enough to obtain them, you know?
How long have you been in town this time?
Oh, just a week.
Will you be staying, or is just passing through?
No, I'm just a traveler. I've always been a traveler. I love Santa Cruz, and I'll continue to come back here, probably no matter what stupid laws they pass. And I'll always find a way through those laws. It doesn't matter what they pass. I'll always find some way, you know.
Where have you traveled from, and where are you traveling to?
Well, I like to travel anywhere. Right now, I plan to go to Vermont next. And see the East Coast for a little bit, because I've never been to New England before.
And where have you been for the last year?
Oh, around California, Oregon, Nevada, just seeing family, seeing places. You know, I enjoy going up and down 101. It's a good highway, and there's so many beautiful places on that highway to hang out at. And Santa Cruz is one of them, but it's not the only one.
And we've been talking with?
Kip.
Thanks, Kip. Still going to be at 101.3. It'll be tomorrow morning.
Wow, I'm such a liar. But he did get on the air, and I'm glad he did.
Talking to the Divine Servitor, and actually he's not going to say anything because he's a man who needs financial support before he feels that he can truly speak the truths that we all want to hear from him. But he has been successful, he says, more so recently, in spite of the ordinances that have come in. He has a table which previously had several tables which were covered with his handicraft.